The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of The Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike, brought to you by U.S. Christian Chamber National Conference and Expo. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey, friends, and welcome to Afternoons with Mike here on The Shepherd. I have with me today in the studio, Ricky Booth. Now, this is an exciting time for me because Ricky is a true-to-life cowboy. And I'm not talking about Dallas Cowboy. I'm talking about somebody who's in the cattle business. And this guy has also done his share of rodeos, and he's a rodeo announcer. On top of all of those things, he is a former school board member in the Osceola County and is currently a county commissioner. And I'd like to welcome Ricky Booth.
Thank you, sir. Such a pleasure to be here. Really an honor. I appreciate it.
It's great to have you here. And I'm not kidding when I say, you know, I grew up, as we were talking before we began the program today, I grew up in Indiana and loved horses. And you've grown up with horses all around you, and you still have them all around you. Oh,
too many horses, we say. But some of your listeners may know my mother is a member of, or is a Parton. The Parton family's been here in Central Florida, I think, traced back their roots to about the 1840s, came into the East Orlando area into Fort Christmas.
Wow.
And then, you know, as time went on, some of them came down to Osceola County where there's some opportunities for some more land. You know, nobody was living here then because we didn't have air conditioners or screens, I guess.
And I tell you what, it took a hardy person to make it in those days.
Well, we always say if you came to Central or South Florida back in those days, you were probably running from something or somebody. And so I haven't heard those stories from my family.
Can't imagine living in Central Florida without air conditioning. I just can't imagine.
It had to be a tough, tough time. But yeah. My great-grandfather, Henry O. Parton, he started the Hart Bar Ranch back around, maybe in the early 1900s. And notice there were some guys in Louisiana and Texas that had imported these cattle from India called Brahmin cattle that were kind of subtropically adapted sort of cattle. Went out and purchased a train load of them in the early 1930s. My granddad could tell the story. Luckily, I've got it on tape. I did it for a middle school project. But they unloaded that train car right there in downtown Kissimmee, still where the train station is today. And they drove those cattle, drove them on horseback around the lake there and back to their property, which was right on the other side of the lake. And it ended up being a very, very good business decision because over the next several decades, he made a lot of money selling those genetics to other Florida producers. Really changed the Florida cattle industry.
Yeah, I grew up hearing the term Brahma bull.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's what he did, basically. He just... You become a cattleman, and you use, like you said, the genetics from the bull and breeding. And first thing you know, you've got a bunch of head of cattle there.
Yeah. So in Florida, back in those times, we had the Spanish cattle, which we call scrub cattle or cracker cattle, or those terms basically brought in by Ponce de Leon and the Spanish explorers. They were running around here, not really high quality beef producers. And we knew that the breeds imported from England all up the eastern seaboard and into the Midwest, Angus and Hereford, the breeds maybe some of your listeners have heard of, they just couldn't survive in the heat. We have a lot of forage here and throughout the entire year, but it's very low quality. And we have a lot of not only external parasite challenges like flies and mosquitoes, but we also have a lot of internal parasite challenges, kind of intestinal worms.
Mm.
And so Brahmin cattle were kind of adapted already to face those challenges. So, you know, by crossbreeding those cattle with the English breeds of cattle, they kind of created the commercial cattle herd that we have in Florida today.
And it's really amazing to find out how many ranchers and cattle farms, if you will, that there are in Central Florida. I mean, it's really been shocking to me.
Absolutely. So as a lot of people know, in my neck of the woods, because they're headquartered right east of St. Cloud, the Mormon Church, the Deseret Ranches, is the largest cow-calf operation in the entire United States, running about 40,000 head of cattle in Orange, Osceola and Brevard County in that tri-county area there. And a lot of people don't, you know, we have the number one tourist destination in the world here in Central Florida, but we also have the largest, traditional cattle ranch in the United States. A lot of people don't know that.
And, you know, when you're out and around, and it's been my privilege to go on some of these farms and go hunting before, and then you see the way the employees of that ranch would be, it's very much like looking at a Western back in the old days. They're riding with on horseback and,
sure,
you know, basically doing what cattlemen did back in the movies.
Well, I laugh all the time because I did an internship. I went to the University of Florida, graduated in 2001.
And Gators.
Go Gators, yeah, yes, sir. Right. The game didn't turn out how we wanted
on.
But as I told you before, my dad's an Alabama grad, so he was certainly
he was happy.
But, you know, I always tell people, I said, you know, Florida's kind of maybe the forgotten frontier, as we say, the Western frontier. We're kind of forgotten here because, you know, as the West was being settled, so was Florida.
Mm-hmm.
People were coming this way. We just don't hear those stories as much, but it was just as tough or tougher to come down here in those days. And you know what? Sometimes we're more cowboy in Florida than they are out West. I did an internship. That's where I was going with my University of Florida story. I spent some time out in Montana working for a huge operation out there. And they utilize more ATVs and trucks and kind of feeding to trap their cattle. We're probably on horseback more here than they are.
Isn't that something?
It's crazy.
Even to this day,
there's just places you can't get four-wheelers and trucks to round up cattle. So we still do it the old-fashioned way. We've kind of got our own line of dogs, our own line of horses, and our own line of cowboys. And so we're very unique here in Florida, but we lose more and more of that all the time as folks move in here. I mean, I think as we talked earlier, the invention of air conditioning and those kind of things made Florida the paradise it is today, and being able to drain off all the water that used to sit around with this canal system that we do have today made Florida a paradise, and we see the fruits of that.
Yeah,
if
you
want to call it fruits, I don't know. It's up to you. I guess I am the beholder, correct?
That's right. And we're glad that you're here. And it is really part of the beautiful thing about, for those that moved down, those that maybe came down to Florida from the West, to be able to see all of what is in the middle part of Florida, away from the parks, away from the attractions. You see real Florida. It is really a gorgeous area. And it's kind of like the Wild West still, like you said. It's the Wild West of the South. Does that make sense? Geographically challenged here.
Yeah.
But, you know, I love the fact that on your biography that was sent to me from Brittany, she tells me that you're fifth generation, meaning your folks have been in this area and a part of this business. So your great-grandfather.
My mother's family.
Yeah.
The Parton family. My mother's a Parton and I think we were talking before, right? They came down here about 1840s, I believe. Still have a lot of relatives I don't even know. The Fort Christmas, the east part of Orange County. I know there's a lot of Partons out there. And certainly the Henry O. Parton family, there's still a ton of us down in Osceola County. And I don't know if I'm fifth or sixth or seventh, who knows? But I'll have to count for real one day.
Wow.
I'm very proud of that heritage to be Central Floridian. But I also get kind of both sides. You know, my dad is from Alabama. My mother went to the University of Auburn to school. My dad went to University of Alabama.
Another house divided.
You know, and it's a lot of fun on Thanksgiving weekend.
Yeah.
So he's kind of one of those new, he's a first generation Central Florida resident. And so I kind of have both sides. Kind of got the old and the new. But both of them served as teachers in Osceola County. My dad was a football and wrestling coach at Osceola High School for a long time, then moved up to be an administrator. My mother was a teacher, middle school age teacher. She did home economics when we used to do home economics. She still sews today. It's crazy. She makes all kind of stuff for kids all the time in her spare time, which she really has none of because she's sewing all the time. But then I'll tell this story, but everybody gets a kick out of this. When they were transitioning out of home economics, they moved her into teaching health science to middle schoolers. And so part of health science curriculum was sex education. So I had my mother for middle school sex education.
Nothing awkward about that.
Nothing awkward. No. Actually, you know what? My mother is a crazy lady, a fun lady, a spunky lady. So she made it work. It wasn't that bad.
Oh, that's great. What a story. Yeah, that is a picture for you. You know, you were raised in this family, and part of your upbringing was faith.
Absolutely.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, so, both my parents came from really strong backgrounds as far as, you know, walking with the Lord. My dad, from East Central Alabama, Alexander City, his parents were both really strong, faithful individuals, and you know, banded together with a group of folks to build their own church. My dad was part of the group that they had to dynamite out the side of a hill. You know, we don't have to do that in Florida, but when you get up at the foothills of Appalachia, you have to do that.
Yeah.
And so, and actually, you know, I took my kids there a while back and there's a plaque because he just did so much work. He was an electrician by trade. So he built, you know, guys aren't like this anymore. Like the guy built his own house on after work, you know, the guy, yeah. We just don't see that kind
of, it's not very often.
Yeah. And people would give him wood or people would give him shingles or people would give him this or that, you know, and that's how it went. But anyway, he was wired the whole church, but he did so much that they put a granite plaque out there and named the park that he helped build, you know, towards the end of his life. And they called it Booth Park. Mm. And so it's a big honor that they did so much for their community, mm-hmm. not only for the people that were in the faith, but to bring people to the faith. And so, in Florida, my mother's family, go way back as we talked about, but they were an integral part of building the First Christian Church of Kissimmee, my great grandparents, Bertha and Henry O. Parton. And so we actually still attend church there today. And so, grew up in the church, had great, you know, Sunday school teachers and great pastors over the years, and have continued that walk, and even more so when you get into politics, I think you lean on your faith even more, and you have to, because it's a tough business. And I will always reminded and talk about serving in politics. You grew up learning about the story of Daniel, right? He being thrown into the lion. Everybody knows Daniel was thrown into the lion's den, right? But I remember seeking a story that would help me politically to guide me. And I think the Lord laid it upon me to, you know, to open up and read about Daniel. And if you read about why he was thrown into the lion's den, what you find out, it was essentially a political coup, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he was had become in favor with these, what we would call, I guess, secular leaders of the day, kings. And over what, two or three kings? I'm not a religious scholar, so don't quote me here. But you can correct me if I'm wrong. I won't be offended. But then people saw they didn't like that, how kind of big he had gotten, and so they knew that if they set a decree, if they got the king to set a decree that nobody could worship anyone but the king for 30 days, that they could get him, and they did, because he didn't lose his faith. He opened his window, he knelt down, and he prayed to God. And that's
he
why
didn't he, hide his faith at all.
He did not hide his faith, even though he served in the secular world, right? He didn't hide his faith, but he still served. He still worked in that world. And I think he was, you know, I'd like to believe he was a light in that world. And that's certainly what I try to be as moving forward. So everybody knows Daniel was in the lion's den, but understanding why, I think, tells, you know, folks that these kind of things happen in politics.
Yeah, and we see that in the New Testament as well, where you have Peter saying, you know, who do we obey? Do we obey man or do we obey God? And in the real way, he didn't bow either.
Sure.
And so it is the way we are called to be lived. Men of conviction, men of conscience. And, you know, those two words, those are becoming, in this secular age that we're living in right now, they're becoming more and more rare.
Sure.
To see people who actually will put it out there on the line and be a part of what your grandparents were, and really work hard to make the church that they're a part of a success. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the old days of barn raisings and church building raisings, those days are just now almost folklore to a lot of people.
Sure. You know, having your faith, being a politician and having your faith right out at the forefront, I think, is important. You know, I tell a good story locally that we have a the mayor of the city of St. Cloud. I don't serve with him. He serves in a different municipality, but in city of St. Cloud, he's the mayor. He's a preacher. He's a pastor. Has built a very successful church over the last 30 years. And I can remember some of the discussion that went on when he was first running. He's in his second term now, so he's done very well. But was it, how can you be a pastor and be a leader? Or be an elected official. Mm-hmm. And I said, wow, it wasn't a lot of people, but it was some people. So to understand that people are actually thinking that way when so means that the dialogue is pushed even further, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, you can't serve as a pastor. You're serving, you have to either serve God or serve your city. It's actually completely the opposite. In my view, when I'm searching out someone to vote for, I would like to know if they're of the faith. I want to know what their faith is, because I'd be more inclined to vote for someone who is of my faith. I actually think it's important that we have Christian leaders and mm-hmm. we build Christian leaders up in our society. It's more important now, maybe, than ever.
Yeah. You know, when we look back at history, a lot of the early leaders in communities were the pastors.
Absolutely.
They were the ones oftentimes that would have been the most educated mm-hmm. and the most aware of what the original founding fathers wanted to see happen in America. But now we're living, like you said, we're living with this cloud of suspicion and a cloud of really nothing less than prejudice over mm-hmm. those who are believers and buying into this notion of separation of church and state. Mm-hmm. It's to the point where they want you to be separated really from God.
Yep. And
forget the fact, you know, understanding
well, look,
that
when you elect me, you're electing, you know, a follower of Christ. And I've made that very clear every time that I've ran. Look, I'll be the first one to tell you that I have fallen short on many occasions, mm-hmm. right, as we all do. But when you elect me, you're electing a Christ mm-hmm. follower. And I love for people to say that. Certainly it's not the only thing, but to me it's mm-hmm. Very important, especially when I'm looking at someone to support. But sometimes we, and I think where we're going in this country, and I just picked up a great book and I just started reading it. I just got in the mail Saturday, so I haven't read anything but the introduction. It's called Earthly Powers by an author named Michael Burley. And it really, the book is focused on political religion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, making ideology your religion and how dangerous that is. And I haven't read the book, so I don't want to quote what he's going for, but I have a view talking about the Reformation period, or the period of time in the basically 19th century Europe. And I'm kind of a nerd when it comes to that stuff. I really love that Russian pre-World War II, pre-World War I, you know, that the Bolshevik mm-hmm. revolution, all those things. I'm kind of passionate about that because I see a lot of correlation of where we're headed today, of where political and ideological leaders in our nation try to draw you in, that this is what can, the politics is what can save you, this party, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes I wonder, and I hesitate a little bit to say this, but is the golden calf a red elephant and a blue donkey today?
You know, a lot of people believe that what you're saying is exactly right. Mm-hmm. And I've talked to some people before who said we suffer from PWS, Presidential Worship Syndrome.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not so sure he's not right.
It's very dangerous.
Oh, my goodness. My guest today is Ricky Booth, and we're going to be back with Ricky coming up in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike. You're in tune to The Shepherd. My guest in the studio today is Ricky Booth. Ricky is from the Osceola County Commission and a part of a family. The Booth family has been around a long time in the cattle business. And something that we'll be talking about in our next and last segment today will be something that Ricky does really for fun and part of his background, and that is in rodeo calling, too. I'm just dying to hear more about that. But for a moment, I want to draw, Ricky, from your 6 years of experience as a elected school board member. Things have been progressively changing in the last, really, what, all my lifetime in school, the way a school board that your grandfather would have seen school operating, the way your grandmother mm-hmm. would have witnessed, to what is happening today couldn't be farther from what that was like.
Yeah, quick story before we get into the deep dive into that. You know, both my grandparents, Henry H. and Mildred Miller, she was before she married my grandfather. They both graduated from Osceola High School in 1935. Now, my grandfather was 2 years older than she was because 1 year they had to treat screwworms in cattle. It was a big epidemic, and he had to take a year off school to do that. And I said, well, Doc, that's what we called him, my granddad. I said, Doc, what was that other year? He said, well, my second grade teacher didn't like me. But but his wife, who was going to be his wife, she was about 16 when she graduated, and she didn't have a family. Her mother died of the Spanish flu when she was about 8 months old. So she was her father was in the logging industry, and she moved over to Loftman, and then he kind of left to go on to work. She was raised by some family over in Loftman, Florida, which is kind of on the west side of the county there, Polk County, Osceola County line. Anyway, shipped her off to University of Kentucky after she graduated because she was the valedictorian. Not many women went to college in the 1930s, right?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
But she only spent about a year there. My granddad drove up there, crossed the line into Indiana. Funny story, you maybe not believe this, but you could be married under the age of 18 in Indiana, but not in Kentucky, without parental consent. So she got married in Indiana, Jeffersonville, Indiana.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He drove her back home, and the rest is history. But anyway, so yes, is the school system different than that school system? Sure, absolutely. I will say this, serving on a school board during this pandemic was extremely tough because... you know, the pandemic is real, right? I mean, COVID, no matter how we think it started or where it came from or who did it or how they did it, the fact that the virus is real that's true. And it was tough to make those decisions back then. But I will say that I have to give so much praise to Governor DeSantis. Mm-hmm. I think he made the most consequential decision of any governor. Around and other governors made the same decision, but he certainly did it as well to essentially force school districts to have that face-to-face option. It kind of took it out of our hands a little bit. I mean, obviously we could have not done it, but the state funds you. So he said, look, if you don't open up, we're not going to send the funding. I was for opening up. I thought we needed to. And you know what? We did it and it worked. You know, we had all we had about in Osceola, we started with about 50% of our kids in school, about 50% at home with a digital option. And it absolutely worked. All my three kids went to school. My wife is a teacher. Mm-hmm. She's a media specialist at a local K-8. So they all went to work. They all went to school. And I think that's a big deal because when I read story, there was kids that didn't get to go to school at all last year in other parts of our country. And I think it's important. That social engagement is
and that's what I was going to ask you
important,
about.
Important piece.
You know, a lot of parents are really concerned about the long-term effects that we're going to be seeing in our country for generations now to come. But the impact that the pandemic, apart from being, like you said, a real problem, it's a real cause for death of people that I know. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's sad. I know a couple of people.
Just was at a funeral on Tuesday.
So we know it's real, and that part is right. I don't believe that all and every reaction, every decision that a lot of politicians in municipalities have made have been the right call.
Sure.
Because of the impact that, as my dad used to say, two wrongs don't make a right.
That's true.
And when we have one wrong being, we know this virus is real, and whether or not it should have ever... been brought into being the way it is. That's a whole big discussion that no one will ever know all the answers.
We don't have enough time for that discussion.
No. but the way that a lot of people have grabbed a hold of this, without a doubt, this thing has been almost weaponized in school boards, in municipalities, in the government in general, across the country.
We have divided communities. I mean, we can see it. I'm not on the school board anymore. And you know, look, the big argument when I was there was just a handful of people, but they were very vocal, was that you just tell the governor, no, you're not opening the school. I said, well, can't do that, or we won't be able to pay our 8,000 employees. I'm not going to put that on them. There were teachers that wanted to get back to work, kids that wanted to get back to school, and not just teachers, but, you know, custodians and, you know, our paraprofessionals and principals, they wanted to get back as well. So, you know, I mean, yeah, we you know, were we killing? I was killing babies when we made that decision. You know, that was some of the rhetoric that was out there. But today, now we've shifted to just masking, right? There was no argument about masking back in August of 2020, very little. But now in 2021, that's where the debate has gone. And I look at it this way. Who is the real enemy here, right? Is it each other? In our
think more and more, a lot of people are feeling that the enemy is a contrived authority that we don't even know who that is beyond, because many people are questioning who's really driving President Biden. I mean, let's face it. I mean,
we can all have those questions.
Yeah, right.
Does he know who's driving?
I'm not even sure he does. But the point of it is that this contrived sense of authority that is driving a lot of these things. And one of the big questions I'm going to jump in now with of you is to say, there in the beginning, a lot of the schools were being driven by this call to be scientific, to do what the science, the phrase was follow the science. Mm-hmm. And it would seem like that we are not doing that anymore.
Well, yes, sure. Science has come. Has become political, right? And I graduated from the University of Florida with a bachelor's of science. I studied animal sciences, and that's not, you know, I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to pretend to be one on this radio show or anywhere else. But the one thing I know about science is that it's an evolving subject, right? We learn, and I've tried to remind people that we don't know everything about how this virus works, how this vaccine works. You know, we don't know, you know, but there's a ton of questions out there, right? But to me, it's the discourse within the community that bothers me, that if you don't believe what I believe, then you're murdering somebody else, or you're killing. We use those kind of vitriolic phrases and terms. And that's what I hate, because to me, the real enemy is not your neighbor. The real enemy is the folks who brought this. If someone did, and I'm not saying they did or they didn't, but if they did this on purpose, if somebody did this on purpose, if it didn't just get released from a lab, and I don't know the answers, and so I hope we're going to do those studies and that research, that's the real enemy, right? Mm-hmm. And just in general, the real enemy is communism and Marxism and those things. And if we're not going to, we have to be, the only way we're going to lose against those things is if we divide ourselves so terribly. And actually, that's what they want us to do, right?
Well, I think many people would feel they're succeeding in doing that.
Well, I think they are. And that's the fight that we have to have. Look, I'm a Republican. I'm a registered Republican. I'm a conservative. I serve with four Democrats, right? I've known all four of them since before I came on the commission. And I would consider myself friends with every one of them. I don't harbor any hate or ill will towards them, even though we disagree and disagree very strongly at times. I always try to keep the discourse respectful. I think our community deserves that. They were duly elected, just like I was duly elected. And I have to respect their position, and even if I disagree with their policy. And I think, I wish that more folks would take that to heart. But, you know, it doesn't get clicks. I don't get clicks on Facebook, and I don't get clicks on Twitter or Instagram or whatever by being a nice quiet guy who stands on his principles, who's strong and has strong convictions, but can also have a respectful debate with an individual that may not disagree. That doesn't buy you any TV time.
That's right.
But that's okay.
Now, you mentioned duly elected, and there are so many people, Ricky, that would believe that the day of national elections, anyway, of being duly operated, of being, let's just say, free from tampering, free from fraud. Do you believe that America can get back to where we can have confidence that votes are really going to be counted?
I do. I certainly do. I mean, look, America's strong, right? And I remind people of this all the time. I said, you know, there, when people say it's never been this bad, it's never been like this, and maybe that's true in some regards, but, you know, there was a time when we took up arms against each other and killed each other. You know,
655,000 killed in that one.
Yeah, from 1861 to 1865, we did that to ourselves, right? And so, yes, I do think that these pendulums can swing, and I certainly hope we start to recognize with this new animal we have called social media that our enemies are taking full advantage of. I certainly hope that we start to become smarter about that, And we, in the next generation, you know, my girls, I have three children, a 16, soon she'll be 17 next week, a 15-year-old daughter, two daughters, and then a son that's 10. And I think they're going to be better at utilizing those tools and understanding. Look, I spoke about it briefly. I think we have two big problems in our country today. And one of them is politics as religion. Now, this is the Ricky Booth opinion. I think making politics religion and not focusing. I've had this discussion with my parents. I said, how much time do we focus on reading the Bible, studying the Word, looking for more information to be deeper in our walk, or than we do watching, you know, the news, or reading Facebook, or reading Twitter, and you can kind of get Christians sometimes to pause there. Say, you know, maybe I have been watching too much TV. Maybe I've been reading too much Facebook. Maybe I need to read the Word a little bit more. Be the salt.
For someone that is in local government, do you see any trend at all in the, let's say, the populace, the people that you serve in Osceola County, where they are going to stand up and let's, really disagree with what's going on?
In what regard?
Well, I mean, like toward social media, toward some of these moves toward removing freedoms from us. Do you see people like standing up against it, just the way parents need to stand up on behalf of their own kids?
Oh, I think they will. When that time comes, I have no doubt that Americans will stand up. And I was going to say number two was journalistic integrity, and you almost touched on it. Mm-hmm. You touch on it with social media. Not being able to believe. Now, somebody who's involved as much as I am, right, and even before I was elected on the school board, because I'm in the agriculture industry, we know how to lobby our folks in D.C. We know how to lobby our folks in Tallahassee because we're always kind of under attack, you know. And so I've been involved in this all the time. So I can see, you know, how these manipulations within the media world go on. But that's dangerous. That's extremely dangerous to not be able to believe what you read or see on TV.
And yeah, it's almost unthinkable.
This is anecdotal, but I did this with my wife the other day. I said, why don't you turn on Fox News? I bet you money they're talking about how bad Joe Biden is. And he certainly has his issues. I said, why don't you switch right over to MSNBC and let's see what, right on the bottom, Trump, da-da-da-da-da, yeah. Right? So it's either, you know, this side is really bad and this side is good, or this side is really bad and that side is good. And that, to me, that's troubling. We need people to hold all of our elected officials. I want to be held accountable by my local media groups. You know, I want to be held accountable, and I want my state officials and my national officials to be held accountable. But we don't have good, credible sources to do that anymore, and that's scary because that means that folks can be influenced in a way that could push us again to go back to that religion. Politics is your religion. That's what communism is. That's what national socialism is. Mm-hmm. You know, the German translation of Nazi, right? That's what we are, the deity, basically. The leader is the deity, and we will lead you to the promised land, essentially. That's dangerous.
One of the things that's long been associated with both the kind of communistic and as well as the Nazi kind of movement was state run. When things are state run, mm-hmm. when things are guided and by that political party that is in the rule, if you will. And yep. Do you see, would you, from your perspective, do you believe that the media has gone to where it is functionally state run?
I don't know if I go that far yet. I think, you know, there are folks that probably, yeah, lean in that direction. Certain folks, like we hate to call it that we have a balance because it's one side is really this way and one side's the other. But there are, that doesn't mean all journalists are bad or all journalists are biased. It's just there's so much of it out there. You as an individual have to be able to decipher through that. And that's what I think is really scary. And, you know, it's Constitution Week, all right? And you're talking about state-run stuff. I was talking to my son. He's in fifth grade. They were studying the Constitution and it's amazing that I said, you know, he can spout off the First Amendment, the Second Amendment. He's learning. I'm glad this is great, right? And I said, you know what that First Amendment means, right? He said, well, yeah, you freedom of speech and freedom of religion, right? Freedom of press. I said, yeah. I said, you know, and even today in some countries that you can be arrested, killed, thrown in jail for just going to church. And I mean, his eyes got huge. This was last night. And, So I don't think kids, and look, he's in fifth grade. He'll learn all these things as he goes forward, but starting those discussions early, I don't think our youth today, and not that I do, I'm 43, I haven't lived in any real troubling times, right? But, you know, is there a day when folks are going to say, nah, that Second Amendment, we don't like that anymore? Is there a time when we say, you know what, yeah, freedom of speech is good, but yeah. You know, I've had this discussion with some legal scholars before, much smarter people than I am. I think we've, if you don't mind me using this term, bastardized the 10th Amendment of the Constitution. We're talking about state run. You know, that says that, hey, if we didn't say it in the Constitution, it's a state's right to do what they want. Mm-hmm. They should be. We do a lot of things at the federal level.
No question about it.
That I think run afoul of the 10th Amendment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they'll argue about some Supreme Court decisions here and yada, 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 right? But I think we do a lot of things in today's America that run afoul of the 10th Amendment.
Well, yeah. If it were not for the governors in America right now who are standing up against some of these federally mandated rules and now new ordinances, if it weren't for the states standing up against that, we'd all be in trouble.
Absolutely. And, you know, the way they do it, and I learned this when I first got on the school board, the way they do it is withholding funds. Mm-hmm. You know, you're at a school and you say, you know, I don't like this new food program that they have. Well, but if you don't do it, you're not going to get this $5 million, which you desperately need. You can not do it. You don't have to do it. The law doesn't say you have to.
Right.
But if you don't, you're not going to get this $5 million. And so de facto legislation.
De facto legislation where your wrist will get slapped if you don't do it. And that slapping is always cut funds. That's right. My guest today is Ricky Booth. We'll be back with Ricky for one more segment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike on The Shepherd. Fun chat today with my guest, Ricky Booth. Ricky is a county commissioner, one of the county commissioners in Osceola County. Spent 6 years for the school board down there as well. Is a big-time businessman in the cattle business, and that in itself is fun. I told him when he first came up today, I kind of expected him to wear a cowboy hat in here because, I mean, he's the closest to a true real living cowboy that I've done in some time here an interview with. But he's also, and this is going to be something we're going to get to, you've had some experience in rodeo announcing.
Yeah. So my family, as we were discussing earlier, was a big part, my grandparents, big part of starting the Silver Spurs Rodeo down in Kissimmee. And for folks that we still put on, you know, well, there's two main shows a year, but we actually got another show coming up next weekend, the Southern Showdown at the Silver Spurs Arena. So, bulls and horses. But yeah, it was all volunteer. They actually started December 7th. They didn't start at this date, but this is why. December 7th, 1941, when the United States was attacked. There was this little group of ranchers, which was pretty much about all Kissimmee was at the time. Said, what can we do to be, you know, what's our part in this? How can we help? And as we entered World War II, I know it was a war bond effort, right? We needed money, right? The nation needed money to be able to build planes, build tanks, ammunitions, all these things. And so they said, you know what? Well, we're cattlemen, right? We can put on a show. We can display our horsemanship and our skills. So let's put on a rodeo. And to get into this rodeo, which was originally done in 1942, I think July 4th weekend, you had to show that your war bond receipt. That's how you got into the show. And the rest is history. We've been doing it now for almost 80 years. We have this working with the county as they did about 15 years ago to the property we owned right on 192 there in Kissimmee. Now we have this big indoor 8,000 seat, you know, air conditioned arena, the Silver Spurs Arena. It's awesome. But all started by volunteers who said, you know what can we do for our country? And, and, you know, my dad has served in leadership. My mother, I've been we call it the big boss, but it's basically the president of the board, my brother, my brother-in-law, we all help. You know, all my kids are involved. My kids are part of the show. We do a kind of a local event that we do called the quadrille. And so you square dance on horseback, a little old school, but the folks that come to the rodeo, that's one of their favorite events, especially if it's done well. My sister is the committee chairwoman there. She is a fan. She's a better horseman than my brother and I, I can tell you that. She is awesome. But she does a great job running that for us. And it's just an awesome things. So that's kind of how I got started in rodeo. Never been really a contestant. When I was a kid, maybe I got on a bull or so, and I've been bucked off a horse several times, but only in my day job. never really competed or won any money. Just as a kid for fun. Done some ranch rodeos, a little different, but had a gentleman who had saw. I got to doing these auctions. I started, you know, bid into 25, 35, 40, you know, that kind of stuff, right? Yeah. So I started doing that just for fun, right? I started doing charity auctions and it's kind of more, I'm a better showman than I am auctioneer. So I knew I couldn't be a professional auctioneer, but one day he said, he was tired of his rodeo announcer. He said, "Ricky, I've seen you talking at all these events and doing all this stuff. Why don't you come out here and just announce my show?" He did a little, it's not even there anymore, the old Sewell's Arena, Kissimmee Sports Arena. Over on the west side of Kissimmee. So for about 4 years, every other Friday night, I was going out there and calling the rodeo, and was lucky enough, just because of my ties to Big Rodeo. Silver Spurs Rodeo is the largest rodeo event east of the Mississippi. So we've grown it to such a huge, huge event. We get all the top guys at our February show. But, you know, I love doing it. You know, it's here's the best thing about rodeo. You know what we do before every rodeo, and this is part of my opening, you know, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Kissimmee Sports Arena, you know, and all that. And, you know, there's two things you're going to do if you come to a rodeo show in the United States of America. One thing is go to our Lord in prayer, and the other thing is we're going to sing the national anthem.
We do that
at every show, you know.
That's wonderful.
And that's what makes it so powerful, right? And I grew up for 40 years. During all the time I grew up, there was a rodeo announcer. His name was Clem McSpadden. He was one of the top announcers in the country at the time. He's from Oklahoma, and he has this great rodeo prayer, and I've kind of stole it, and I've made it into my own, you know. And people remember it, and so they love. All the old folks remember that prayer, and when I get to bring that out. And one time our announcer, his plane got delayed in Kissimmee, so it was a big honor. I got to call first about hour of the show, because he was delayed on a plane, and, you know, so that was tough, you know, going from calling rodeos with 400 or 500 tourists who didn't know what the heck was going on anyway, so you could kind of say and do whatever you wanted, to this huge production with smoke and lights and veterans coming out that we always do at the Silver Spurs and honor our disabled veterans, and man, 8,000 people, but wow, what a rush.
Wow, I bet.
I love doing it.
It's great.
It's a lot of fun.
And you sound good. I can tell that's
well, I have my rodeo. This is my normal speaking voice. My wife hates my rodeo announcer voice.
Okay, can you break into it?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Kissimmee Sports Arena, or welcome to the Silver Spurs Arena in beautiful Kissimmee, Florida. We're so glad to have you here today. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, all right.
There you go.
Now, do you add effects under you, like verb or anything like that?
No, you know, and I get accused sometimes of throwing up in my mouth, and I go too far. Wacky FMDJ, you know. But I really like to get into it. I really enjoy it. You know, and then you get those 85 bull bucking points. How about it? Hey, ladies and gentlemen, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And just, I mean, you can go a little more southern, a little more country. I've got a little southern and country twang to my talk anyway, but you really get down into it when you're calling a rodeo, because that's the gig. You know?
That's fun.
You play the part, right?
And you're going to do this just coming up soon in
Baker,
the Panhandle, huh?
I'll be in Baker, Florida. Yeah, if you want to join me up in Baker, Florida this weekend. I'll be up there for two nights. I'll be in Dothan, Alabama, in October. And I think possibly I haven't inked this deal yet, but possibly up in North Georgia, Calhoun, Georgia at the end of October. So a lot of fun. Hey, but I got a daughter that plays travel softball with her all weekend, and Vieira, and a son that plays Pop Warner football. My older daughter will get into her basketball and flag football season's coming up. So I hate missing their stuff, you know, and this weekend I'm going to be missing some of their stuff, and I hate that. But you know, they understand. You know?
Wow.
I make everything I can. I can tell you what, I love watching my kids play sports. I can remember my mom and dad never missed game, and very rarely. I mean, obviously they would have stuff to do, but, they were at every single, they never sat at home and didn't come to a game. If they weren't in a game, it was because they had some other thing. And I'm like, geez, how do they do that? That's crazy.
Mm.
But I love it. I can't tell you how much I love watching my kids play sports.
It's a lot of fun.
It's so much fun.
And I got to do that. And I can tell you that day finally ends and they get past all of that. It's a very special time. When you're in the middle of it, it feels like it's going to go on. And that's the way life will always be.
Yep.
But like everything else in life, it changes. and you lose that one little pocket of time that's there. And I always tell parents, enjoy it as long as you can and as long as you have it.
Yeah, well, I do.
It's not going to always be there. You said something, and I'd like to have you balance the rest of our time here with this. You mentioned what all of those rodeo people did, all of the people down in Kissimmee during that, when we were attacked on Pearl Harbor, and they got together and they said, what can we do? Mm-hmm. What can be done? How can we use our resources? I'd like to ask you, what do you think the average right now Floridian, what can they do to fight all that's going on right now?
I think one thing that I seem to notice is this, I don't know if it's a fear of engagement or just a lack of enthusiasm, right? I don't know, but get engaged. You know, I think so much can be done. And I wrote an article for the newspaper a few years back about this, talking about the Silver Spurs, because it was a group of volunteers. So, I mean, I really think that our country could change if people just took some of their, right? What's the one resource, your most valuable resource, right, is your time. Just giving some of your time to someone else. That's what those people did. I mean, that's what, and, you know, sometimes I think it's a curse that we have to spend so many hours putting on this rodeo every year. But it's a blessing for our community, right? Mm-hmm. We're giving, you know, we take those funds and we're, you know, when I was growing up, we give them to the children's home, or now we, you know, we're giving them to cancer research, or we're helping kids go to college, or, you know, we're helping disabled veterans. We're doing all these things that are so great for just one thing. If you could help one person, right? It sounds so simple, yeah. But if you could just do one thing and stay to help someone. And stay engaged with your local politics. And I don't mean by getting on Facebook or Twitter and telling them how stupid they are. That's not going to get you anywhere. I think if you have an issue in your community, instead of writing about it on Facebook, call me. Mm-hmm. You know, I always say, I put my personal cell phone out there, my email address. I try to answer if you call me today, I try to get right back to you. Don't always. I'm a pretty busy guy, but. You know, that's instead of creating, you know how it's different when it's hard to talk bad about someone after you've kind of sat down and broke bread with them, mm-hmm. right? I think we need more of that. That's my get away from the computer and get into the community. And in any way.
As divided as our country is right now, Ricky, mm-hmm. do you think that we can get back to a place where decorum like what you're describing could be there again?
Well, I think we have to. I don't think we have a choice if, you know, and I'm not talking about 10, 20, 30 years, but if this is going, if this country is going to last another century, two centuries, mm-hmm. We have to hope that we're just kind of on that bottom part of the roller coaster right now, what you call decorum. We have to hope that we're going up. And I can tell you, you can't go up. You can't throw God off that roller coaster. He's got to be there with you, or you're not going to go back up. Mm-hmm. And so we've got to continue, I think, as Christians to be that light in our communities as well. And to show just through our actions, mm-hmm. That, and look, I'm not a perfect person. Absolutely not. But to show people that walk is important for me. You know, that my Savior is important to me, and that's an important part of my life, and that guides the way that I make decisions for my community, which my community's asked me to do on their behalf. So, I do believe. I'm an optimistic guy. Mm-hmm. I like to have fun. I'm a fun-loving guy. People that know me, if they're listening to this, they're laughing because they know. I like to have a good time. I like to joke around. And sometimes that gets me in trouble in the public settings because sometimes I make a joke that maybe not everybody thinks is funny. But I just enjoy life. I don't let people steal my joy. Happiness is a choice. I tell my kids that all the time. You live in a great, great world. And actually, we live in a great time. You know, sometimes I think a lot of these issues are just so manufactured. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you just telling the story about my grandmother, her, you know, grew up, her mother died when she was before she was a year old. Her stepmother ended up dying before she was 8 years old, and she was raised by some other family. She's still the valedictorian of her high school, still went to college, still got married, still had four kids. And she was just a spunky, fun-loving, awesome. Now, she didn't put up with nothing. And she'd use an oak switch or a fly swatter on your behind really quick. But, man, you've got to have that love for life. When, you know, and we've got to nurture that within people, in our youth and our kids, that man, we live in such a great time, such a great country, and let's make it even better.
You know? I think we can, and I think it's, I like what you're saying. We really don't have an option. We really need to make this thing work. Mm-hmm. And the only way it's going to work is if we all just give that part of our hearts that needs to be given over to God and trust Him, and to say, Lord, have mercy, change us where we need to be changed. Let us do what would be the right thing to do. If we could do that, it would make all the difference in the world.
If we'd all just do what God says, we'd be all right. Yeah. That sounds so easy, doesn't it?
But it is true. Ricky Booth, my guest today, thank you so much. What's the way that people can follow you or get in touch with you?
Oh, I'm on Osceola County Commission. I represent District 5. My email address is ricky.booth@osceola.org. My phone number is 407-908-9866. If you have an issue, if you certainly can call me. But I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Instagram. I don't know all the handles, but they're out there. Commissioner Ricky Booth, they're there.
Commissioner Ricky Booth, thank you for being with us today. And friends, thank you for joining us here on Afternoons with Mike.
Afternoons with Mike, brought to you by U.S. Christian Chamber, National Conference and Expo.